Hi, the Black Talk Media Project would like to invite you to become a member of the BTR Community subscription-based social media platform. BTR Community is a platform that was set up for the listening audience of Black Talk Radio Network, the number one independent Black radio network online. For just $24 per year, your subscription gives you access to an interactive space to share information with like-minded people with your privacy guaranteed. Your subscription will go a long way to help us maintain and improve our current media platforms. It will also help provide a budget so that we can begin the task of establishing localized media centers and radio stations across the United States. The best way to show your support and appreciation for what we do here at Black Talk Radio is to subscribe. Help us to help you be informed. Join BTRCommunity.com today.
The views and opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium.
The necessity. Welcome. Let's begin.
Welcome, welcome, peace and greetings to everyone this evening. You are tuning in to Real Life, the radio show, sponsored by Foundational Radio Network and backed by Black Talk Radio Network. This is your brother, Ross. My co-host is Jenna Capra. Are you there? If not, you can come in later, but I think you might be busy right now. So again, thanks for joining us this evening. It is Tuesday, the 8th of May, 2018, and we're about to get into a really, really great show for you this evening. Are you there, Jenna?
Yes, sir, I am.
Oh, okay, cool.
My apologies.
Oh, no problem. First, we just wanted to say, again, thanks for joining us this evening, this Tuesday evening. And first, we just want to take care of some basic things, the most important things, actually. Please continue to support Black Talk Radio Network. You can donate some of, like Dave says, your financial energy, your currency to the network so that we can continue to do the work that we do and bring the information and potent discussions that we need to have to the people. One great way of supporting is by joining BTR Community. That is the social media network created by us for us in order to facilitate conversations between us as melanated people in a manner where your data will not be mined. You don't have to worry about your information being sold to anyone. It is a closed platform for $24 a year. That basically breaks down to $2 a month. You'll be able to facilitate a subscription, and that way you'll have access to quite a few of the different radio show hosts are on there, including myself and Jenna Capra, as well as a whole bunch of other great black people that are just having discussions that are necessary for our people, especially with the different things that are taking place right now. The world is changing quite quickly, and we're going to need to have that contact and communication, and that is a great way of doing so in a closed environment where you can fully express yourself and say, you know, what you feel you need to say without having to worry about any repercussions from anyone, pretty much in regards to, like, that information getting out and becoming some sort of issue for you and getting a job or something of that nature. So please join BTR Community for $24 a year. I believe right now, I think it's still going on, but you have the opportunity of joining the community free for 30 days to test it out. And then after the 30 days, you have the option of paying the $24 for the year subscription, and that way you can join the community, you know, long-term that way. So hopefully you'll take that opportunity. You can also donate to BTR Community at the Black Talk Radio Network website, and the donation prompts are on the site, so you should be able to find it there. And, you know, if you need anything, just hit us up. We'll be able to take care of you. Jenna.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Was there anything you wanted to discuss before we get everything started today?
Just hoping everybody had a great weekend, safe weekend.
For sure.
Not running into any slave catchers. But no, I was ready to get into the videos. Did you post those?
Yes, I did. I just wanted to let me just see if there's, because I know we did have some articles posted. I'm just going to talk about a couple things, and then we're going to get right into it. Did you want to deal with the drones and stuff first? I think that's probably the best bet, and then we'll pick, because that I think what we're going to get into later will take up the lion's share of the discussion. So
yeah,
if you want,
I agree.
We can do that.
I agree.
Yeah.
Initially, it was put to me by way of L.A. Ramon, actually. Mm-hmm. L.A. Ramon posted an article that you put up. Well, previously, mm-hmm. we had been discussing drone activity and the military use that's being put in place about a year ago. I think when it first started, I was talking to you about this man was videotaping the soccer game. And that was the first time I had seen it in real life. Now, right now, with all the stuff that's crashing down on us, these things are going to be very, very particular. If you know how to operate them, that's great, because it gives you a lot of outs just to be able to find how to maneuver, who's around you. I think the article I was referencing was gang members swatted the SWAT. Ain't that what it was? I can't find that on the thread right now. But these same things, whenever things start getting chokehold, RC boats, if you live near waterways, RC cars, all of these things are equipped with high-definition cameras nowadays, and this is a way that you could maneuver around and see your surroundings without being caught up. You know, call me crazy. But it's a lot of people that think like me. Some of you that's listening also think like I do.
Yes, sir.
Right now, we have a cheap outlet to where you could get these remote control vehicles, the way you have eyes and ears around places that you probably shouldn't be at physically. And I think we need to take advantage of these particular opportunities. The articles that I had attached was just a list of different things that people have been known to use them for, so they're not worth going over. I think all of us need to check those out, though. But you can go ahead and continue, Brother Ross.
Oh, okay. Thank you. So they did have a couple of really interesting articles. One in particular that caught me. This one's from ScienceAlert.us, and it is entitled, "Scientists Have Created Artificial Embryos That Are So Lifelike They Initiate Pregnancy in Mice." So the little blurb says, for a fetus to develop into a healthy baby whose early stages of pregnancy are critical, if things don't go wrong, the pregnancy might not come to term, or the baby might develop health problems later in life. Here's the thing, though. Right now, doctors have no idea how to intervene if problems like that come up. So they've created this artificial embryo that has now started to facilitate life, from what they're saying. And they don't know how to handle if certain things start to happen that can potentially end the pregnancy. But the whole idea that they can take an artificial embryo and get it to literally attach to the uterine walls of a mouse to start the process of cell division is just very interesting and mind-blowing, to say the least. And I think we're going to see a lot. Go ahead.
Same thing, man. We got to finish that book. I done said this several times, but we really got to finish that book. All of these things, we was talking about this already. And it has led other people on to different scenarios of what's going on. But they have been researching this for quite some time. It was only a matter of time before we all seen it.
That's very true. I agree. Before we move into the rest of the show, there's another article that I found from Free Thought Project, and it is public to be scanned in real time as police body cameras may soon get facial recognition. New innovations in technology are allowing police officers to contribute to a growing database by implementing facial recognition software in breathalyzer tests and on body cameras. The largest maker of body cameras in the United States, Axon, announced last week that it has purchased two artificial intelligence companies and it is creating an ethics board for the purpose of preparing to use the technology with its current products. So basically, they're going to have police officers nationwide with cameras that will facially recognize you in real time. So if you're going to work and you pass an officer on the way to work, that camera's on your face. If he chooses to or they choose to at the station, they'll do a facial recognition on you. If you demonstrating in some crowd somewhere, you're going to definitely be facial recognition is going to be done to you as well in real time. So this is not something that's going to happen after the fact. It's something that's going to happen at that moment. So that's very interesting, because there's another article that kind of ties into this from TheVerge.com, and it's entitled "A Facial Recognition Program Used by British Police Yielded Thousands of False Positives." During last summer's Champions League finals in Cardiff, Wales, South Wales, police began a facial recognition pilot program destined to check event goers against a database of 500,000 images of persons of interest. Almost a year later, The Guardian reports that the pilot yielded 2,470 potential matches, of which 2,297 were found to be quote-unquote false positives. So I can see a lot of that happening here. The only difference is the trigger happiness of United States police officers. I can see a lot of people getting shot by a false positive, because they're very quick to shoot. And recently the Supreme Court basically gave police carte blanche to shoot first and worry about questions later, as long as they're quote unquote in fear, feel like they're in fear for their life. So I could see a lot of people getting shot off of this camera stuff, and they'll just say, "He made me scared," or "She made me scared," or "The child made me scared, I shot him," and the law will cover them for that. And then bang, they'll find out, oh, this was a false positive. This person was actually not a criminal at all. They had a 9-to-5 and minded their business their whole life. Doesn't have a criminal record. But now they're shot because, some cop decides to be quick on the draw and not ask any questions. So I could just see that becoming a great, great problem. Now let's move into This Is America. How you want to kick that off? As far as you just want to get into the discussion itself, or what?
Yeah, we can, brother. You wanna hear that? Hear the actual video first.
Sure. Yeah, that'll be a good way to segue into it.
Brother Scott, are you there?
Yeah, I'm queuing it up for you.
Okay, thank you very much, brother Scott.
But yeah,
we just want a party, party just for you. We just want the money, money just for you. I know you want a party, party just for me. Girl, you got me dancing. We just wanna party just for you. We just want the money just for you. I know you wanna party just for me. Girl, you gotta dance and shit to bring.
This is America. Don't catch you slipping now. Don't catch you slipping now. Look what I'm whipping now. This is America. Don't catch you slipping now. Don't catch you slipping now. Look what I'm whipping now. This is America. Don't catch you slipping now. Look how I'm living now. Police be tripping now. Yeah, this is America. Guns in my area. I got the strap. I gotta carry 'em. Yeah, yeah, I'ma go into this. Yeah, yeah, this is gorilla. Yeah, yeah, I'ma go get the bag. Yeah, yeah, or I'ma get the pad. Yeah, yeah, I'm so cold like, yeah. Yeah, I'm so dull like, yeah. We gon' blow like, yeah.
catch you slipping now. Look what I'm whipping now. Look how I'm geeking now. I'm so pretty. I'm on Gucci. I'm so pretty.
Yeah.
I'm on get it. Watch me move. This is Sally. That's a tool.
Yeah.
On my Kodak. Black. Ooh, know that.
Yeah.
Ooh, get it. Bands, 100 bands, 100 bands. Contraband, contraband, contraband,
contraband.
I got the plug on with Haka.
Whoa.
They gonna find you like Paco.
You there, Jenna?
Yeah, I have one for sure. You know,
America.
I just checked my following, listen.
You gon' tell somebody.
You motherfuckers owe me.
Grandma told me, get your money, black man.
Black man.
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 Yeah, I knew it was a few stops in that, and that's why I was just waiting.
You better than me, because I totally forgot about the stop, and then I thought about it after the music started. I said, oh shucks, I forgot about that. Yeah. Wow. You said you had the lyrics, right? Do you have them there?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do.
Okay.
Now, which part of the lyrics do you want to get into first?
Well, I just wanted to start by saying to me, because my wife was the one who first told me about it, and she said, first thing she said is it's extremely graphic, because my wife does not like anything violent, anything that relates to violence and blood or anything. She doesn't like that. Her essence is averted to that type of stuff. So she said it's disturbing, but she said it's fascinating. And she said because of the message that it was sending, even though it was violent, it wasn't overtly violent for no reason. And then she sent it to me and I watched it and I was like, wow. I said, okay. Now, what I found, because I saw a couple of analyses of the video that I thought were really brilliant, and they discussed the fact that you know, some of the incidences that he reenacted were events that actually happened, like the when the choir was shot, that would be an ode to Mother Emanuel Church, where the nine people, including the Senator Pinckney, was gunned down by Dylan Storm Roof. And what I found telling was that even though it was a white person who did the shooting, in the video it was him, a black male, who did the shooting. So to me it was kind of like a double message. The message was, do not forget what happened to these people, but at the same time, a lot of the problems that we see with gun violence come from people who look like us. And one thing I noticed that they brought out in one of the videos I saw was the fact that every time he would kill someone, he would go back to dancing, and they would have children dancing behind him. Every time he was doing the dance after killing someone, he would start dancing, and there would be young children there. Which means, but in my opinion, that's what he's saying, is that the children are absorbing these messages, and then these things play out because they're dancing. And I told my wife, and she thought it was, she said, I think I've never heard it analyzed that way. I said, basically, we're dancing to our own depths, and we're so enraptured with the drums, and we're so enraptured with the hypnotic tones of syncopantic rhythm, on top of the fact that the person is speaking in rhyme, which in and of itself can be entrancing. And we're not paying attention to what's being said and what's being done as a result of what's being said. Because, you know, I know this from just running the streets myself. Anything that you wanted to do in the streets, no matter how dangerous or deadly, there's a soundtrack. there's an album, there's a track you can go to and say, yo, whenever I get into some dirt, this is what I listen to motivate me to go do what I got to do. And that is something that just applies, because music is something that, you know, it imitates some of the things that happen in real life, but then it exacerbates it because it makes it, it glorifies it. And that's what basically, you know, Scotty and Kwabena Rasuli does with Clear the Airwaves and all of that stuff. And it's really, to me, it's a graphic depiction of how that plays out. And I just found it quite telling that even though he was reenacting events in certain cases committed by white people, it was him, a black person, actually doing it in the video reenactment. And I just thought that that was like a double entendre, kind of like a mirror to both sides of the equation, based on the fact that, like I said, we're more likely to die at the hands of one of our own than from one of them. But yet we also have these acute acts of violence that take place, like, you know, Mother Emanuel Church, and there's so many others that we can name. So, yeah, go ahead. Let's get into the lyrics from the top. Let's see what he's saying from the beginning.
Well, I'm because as you know, you've heard it, we just listened to it, it's a lot of repetitiveness.
Mm-hmm. And that's not by accident either.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you want to party just for me. Girl, you got me dancing. Dance and shake the frame. We just want to party. Coming lyrics, not necessarily in that order, but same thing that's being said. And that's another Peter the Pied Piper type of deal, what you were just saying. The children mm-hmm. walking behind you and imitating everything you're doing. That's the Pied Piper thing. And that's what's going on right now in the hip hop industry, is where they just got catchy little hooks that just repeat itself. So that was one ode to the hip hop that's going on right now. But then also, he goes right into.
Oh, go ahead.
Now go ahead, Brother Ross.
Oh, I just wanted to say about him saying this party. We call ourselves dancing under the premise of having a party, but we're listening to ultra violent music, and the message gets lost. Like, you know, you'll have songs that call women out their names, and they'll be the first ones on the dance floor to the song and say, he ain't talking about me. And they'll just, you know, keep going like it's nothing. And these are the things that desensitize young men, or even boys, teenagers, in regards to how they relate to females. Because if a female says to them, I don't want to date you, I don't want to be with you, then usually the next thing will be for them to call them out their name, because they feel insulted. Like, anytime I say something to you, you're supposed to, you know, respond in kind. It's supposed to be positive. And if it's not, then you everything but the child of the creator. Yeah. And
that's the Pied Piper theme right there. But let me get through a little bit more mm-hmm. of these. And we see you right there, Brother Chris. We're going to get with you in just a few. Hold on just a second.
Sure, no problem.
Thank you, baby. Mm-hmm. All right, shut that door for me, please. Mm-hmm. My apologies. Live radio, as Dave always say.
Do not apologize. That is your child. It's all good.
We get to the that's after the smooth part, you know, get the children jumping, and like I say, the Pied Piper music, and then it goes into this is America, don't catch you slipping up. And he say that repetitively.
That's what I wanted to address. When he says that, he's saying, I don't care what you're doing.
Well,
even if you're partying, go ahead.
Hold on, Ross. Let me because it got the whipping up in there, but that's just here and there. But like you was talking about, don't catch you slipping up. And then it goes to his verse. This is America. Don't catch you slipping up. Look at how I'm living now. Police be tripping now. Hey, this is America. Guns in my area. I got the scrap. I got to carry them. Mm-hmm. Now you go ahead, Brother Rise, because I already knew where you was going, but don't catch you sleeping up. That's where we at right now.
Okay, so that is something that, you know, long before I was born, it was like that. And when I came up, it was like that. You're supposed to be prepared at any time for anything. And that's how we used to roll. I still roll like that now, pretty much. But ultimately, what he's saying is, no matter what you're doing, even if you're doing something that is supposed to be as innocent as partying, you can get it too. And we know many people that have died in parties. Matter of fact, when I was really young, there was a sister, she was about 16. She was supposed to be babysitting a child of one of her relatives, and her girlfriends came over about this party at this club in Brooklyn. And she ended up asking her other sister to watch the child for her while she went to the club with her girlfriend. So she went to the club. Now, this was a club that was notorious for getting shot up and then changing its name. So it'll change its name like 5-6 times in a year because there was always a shooting in there. So this particular night, she goes in the club and she's having a good old time. And so this drug dealer was looking for another drug dealer that happened to be in the club. So they were only searching men. And he gave a Uzi to a female that was with him. And of course, they weren't searching females. So she got the Uzi in the club without a problem. Now, he literally, as soon as he spots the guy, he just pulls out and sprays the whole floor and damn near cuts my friend in half with that. And, you know, they, from the people who did survive and who saw what happened, she basically, and the other people who got hit like her, basically just folded up right where she was and passed away on the spot. And I remember, like, our neighborhood was devastated for, like an entire summer. It was just horrible, but it wasn't the only time that it happened. There were other people that we knew and other parties. I've been to parties that have been shot up. But it's just something that, to me, he's just saying, this is America. Anything could happen at any time. Things could be seeming to be a wonderful day, and then it's marred by some violent event or some one-on-one contact, because there's a lot of that too, where people just, you know, they'll run up on you and catch you slipping when you least expect it. You're out with your family doing something, and that's when they choose to, you know, shoot you. So, I mean, to me, that's pretty much what he's saying. He's telling everybody, this is America. You know, don't catch you slipping up. You know what I mean? You slipping, then anything can happen. And you even hear it in a lot of today's rap. You know, they'll speak to that sort of reality all the time. Especially like from certain areas of the country where violence is high. That is something that is a catchphrase. Just like when violence was high in New York, it was a catchphrase in New York as well. So I just think that it's a psychological primer for what to expect, but at the same time,
yes,
yeah, it's a primer. It's
you are correct, man. Yeah, you are so correct, Brother Rise. And the visuals, mm-hmm. the visuals that go along with that video is very telling. But let's get Brother Chris in there before we continue on. Brother Chris, your mic is open. How are you tonight?
All right. How y'all brothers doing?
Good. Peace and love. Right. I'm still learning.
Peace. I'm learning.
Still learning.
Okay. So the video, basically, it shows two different... If you watch the video and then you listen to the song, you're going to feel two different ways. First of all, the video, it takes this African perspective. So a lot of people are going to embrace the yay yay and the dancing and the gyration. You know, I picked out, when I first watched it, I watched about a minute, and I was like, I didn't like how he was moving. I said, why we got to be so feminine in this action? Even though he's not a homosexual, I'm just saying.
I think that wasn't by accident.
That kind of threw me off, but then I said, you know what, let me sit down and watch it. So I watched the whole thing, and then when I got done with it, I said, okay, he basically just pointed out what is America. Mm-hmm. And that's what he did. But now if you listen to the lyrics and you do mm-hmm. not watch that video... Mm-hmm. It's almost like he embracing the drug game. Whip it up. Now, whip it up. Talking about turning kids. He's talking about contraband.
Mm-hmm.
Turning
mm-hmm.
drugs, man. He's saying, get your money. What's the only way we going to get our money? If we ain't entertaining or selling dope, we ain't going to get no money. So that part right there was where I was like, okay, just when I listened to the lyrics, from reading the lyrics,
mm-hmm.
not watching the video. When you watch the video, you feel like, oh, because you don't really listen to his words in the video. You just see his movement, and you look at what he's doing. But when you listen to the song outside of mm-hmm. the video, mm-hmm. he's still embracing drug culture.
I think that's why he did the video, because...
I understand why you say it, but it's like you accepting it because you know his point.
No, it's not that. What I'm saying is he didn't release the song by itself. He released the video first. So like it was like late at night, like two nights ago, I think it was like 11 p.m. or something, he released the video. And I think there's a reason why he put the song out with the video, so that it would not be taken out of context in a situation where you're listening to the song and not listening to the video.
Because
if you really, if you listen to the hook where he's saying this is America, that is America. Drug culture is America. So to me, it's like you said, it's the context. And that's why I think he purposefully says, let me put the video and the song out. But I totally understand what you're saying. I'm not saying you're incorrect at all.
Public Enemy did not come that way.
Absolutely. You're absolutely correct about that.
Even when you listen to the song and you watch the video. And all I'm saying is, and I get what he was doing, you got to make it to where people ain't at home getting scared. Because he could have had him, he could have made it where he was killing the enemies. He could have been shooting, but they probably wouldn't have let that get out.
Not at all.
That's why, that's why the director... That's why the director was a Japanese dude.
Yeah.
So what I'm saying is just my opinion on it. I'm not, it was a, I thought it was, I thought it hit the point. And I think every brother that puts stuff out, from Kanye to anybody else, all you're doing, what they're doing really good is they're opening up doors. We all victims of this, of this society, and it's mentally got us acting certain ways. So anything a brother put out, if it opens the door to a negative, a positive, or even you thinking outside the box, okay, I'm with it. But I'm just gonna end on this real quick though, man. The average person that hear that song, Roz, is not gonna see it like you talking.
No, you're absolutely correct. And I was gonna qualify it by saying that, because that is very true.
They gonna think they still should be whipping chickens and going out here getting this money. They're not gonna see it. That's gonna be a motivation for brothers who don't have that type of consciousness. That's
You're absolutely correct.
Why can't
we just come out
and tell the truth? But see,
you
I understand
just be
what we're living
about
in.
It. Yeah.
Yeah, he got a dance, and which is fine. I get it. You know, I get it. I get the news, whatever, whatever. But what I'm saying is, when Snoop Dogg and all them cats came out, and you know, cats from New York and Mobb Deep, when they came out saying whatever they was doing, and that was they was doing. But he's trying to level a balance field. Cause he don't agree. I know he don't agree with brothers selling drugs, but he knows people that probably got to do it to survive. So he gotta put that in there too. But you telling the brother to keep whipping. Mm-hmm. Okay, come on, man. You know, get your money. When you know how we know, and we talk about money and what it is, and you know, silver and metals and all that stuff. We know this gonna be obsolete in a minute anyway. But you know, that's all I'm saying. It still seems like. You leaving something out. And I ain't, you know, and I just left it at that. I respected the video, and I get it, because it opened up a gateway. But when you try to rationalize it and make it like, because the average cat is not going to embrace it like that.
Yeah, they're going to rationalize it, because that's what they do. If you do something, you're going to find a way to rationalize what you do.
Because if you hear that song,
positive or not,
if you read those lyrics and you embrace those lyrics, and that's all you know, because they are going to listen to that song, and they're going to feel like I need to keep doing what I'm doing. But if you do not see the video,
right, you don't have context.
The song on the radio don't even put the image of the video.
Not at all. It's a totally different thing.
And so it, you know, but like I say, it opened doors. It opened doors to open mind. And you know,
I'll
give him a call.
great addition, bro. Yeah, you good. Pop in later too.
I can understand everything that you were saying.
Absolutely.
But like Rob said, that video is it's powerful, as far as the fact of what we going through right now, to be able to see that.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah.
You know, it's just another one of those things that we have to deal with.
Very true.
Because the same way he was killing, other brothers in the video, you know, a brother got smoked here last night. I mean, it's a constant cycle. So, you know, we gotta figure out what we're going to do to stop this. Because like Brother Chris was saying, the lyrics is what the children gonna be listening to. They ain't gonna be attached as much as they are attached to Facebook and all of this YouTube and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody, parents, gonna be riding around bumping that too. And like you said, these lyrics, and that's why I looked the lyrics up. You know, I wanted to.
Yeah, that's what I didn't have time to even do that, but I'm going to, and I wanted to do that from day, you know, from the first time I saw it. Cause I was just like, wow, I didn't expect something like that to come out. Cause everybody said, like, he just pushed it out. It's not like the whole album came out. It's just that one song in the video came out at, you know, was released as the song. And then I was like,
Let's just go to this verse two, man.
Okay.
Because it's crazy. Look, this verse two, it go, look how I'm geeking out. I'm so fitted. I'm on Gucci. I'm so pretty. You remember he mentioned about the feminism that he was showing.
Yeah, there was a dance he did that was a feminine, and I think that's all part of the culture. Because remember, when he was doing the dances, there were children behind him dancing too. So he's saying they're getting that effeminate stuff from watching rappers on TV, because they're wearing dresses now, they're wearing parasols, what they call them, rompers, all of this deviant, anti-sexual stuff. And I mean, like, it's weird because, like, we had read the Delectable Negro on the cow, and I remember one thing that he talked about was the fact that they never let young black children get fully dressed on the plantation. Boys, and sometimes up until their early 20s, will be running around the plantation with just a shirt on and freeballing it. And the white men would take pleasure in watching these children, young girls, same thing. They would run around with very little left to the imagination. And a lot of times, because rape was wholesale, it was easy access because they had nothing on in the first place. So it's really crazy, because when you look at the what he was doing when he did all that effeminate stuff, I thought about that. This is a part of the infusion. Matter of fact, I posted an article about this this gay rapper that won an award for doing a whole song about being what they call a receiver. It was a white rapper who had, I forget the dude's name. I posted it on BTR, and I said, this is how they indoctrinate your children. How many children are watching this guy? And like you said, they listening to the lyrics. Now, mind you, they're teaching children in school now about, you know, homosexual intercourse. So now you got a song that's telling you all of this, you know, descriptive deviant stuff to coincide with what you're hearing in school, depending on the school your child goes to. And him doing that in the video says to me, bang, they're trying to get that transhumanism started early. They're getting it into the children. And that takes me to King Leopold's letter, where he says you got to indoctrinate the children. Yes.
Before you, after you get done, we got a call out of California. Just let
okay.
you know.
Okay. No problem. I'm going to make it short. Yeah, they're trying to get them young, because in King Leopold's letter, he says, make sure that the children respect your word above the word of their parents. And that is what the system is doing now. When you send your children to those schools where it's okay to have a unisex bathroom, and you know you're teaching them about what they call, I guess, alternate families, which would be lesbian families, homosexual families, all of this crazy stuff. They're getting it in like first grade. So you know, now you got music, if you want to call it that, that coincides with the possible education that the child might be getting in school, that might have them all twisted up, and they haven't even begun puberty yet. I'll end it there. So I call her out of California. Just give us your name, where you're calling from, and your question or comment. Good. Whoever it is, I don't know who it is. I was about to say peace. I don't know.
What up, Jenna? What up, Roz? How you doing? It's Rain. It's Days. How you feeling, man?
What's good? How you doing?
Good, Roz. Good, Roz. Great show as always, man. Just wanted to chime in and tell y'all, man, phenomenal, you know, thing that you're doing. I would say, you know, with that whole thing, always be careful of the duality of spirits. That's yeah, really what's being projected. Mm-hmm. And you know, you remember who's putting this together.
Absolutely.
Who's really driving the overall message? And what is the overall agenda of these real messages? And they'll give you a pretty face. They'll give you a very great lyric. They'll give you some mesmerizing infusion of literacy with it, and mm-hmm, and just articulation with it, but it's still the devil's lair. And so the duality of spirits is something that we always have to be mindful of, and keeping keep in point is that.
Who's that, Chris?
And keep in mind, of just what you said, that you know, the whole agenda is for the system to raise the ideology overall of our youth. That has become more of and it supersedes the parenting. It becomes their god, the god that they worship. And so there's a duality of spirits that we always have to, because if we're not doing things individually, absent of, now I'm not against this person or that person, but this person and that person is not me. What are you doing? And I really don't, you know, my whole emphasis is, if you're spending too much, if our children are spending too much time watching what someone else is doing, then they become the byproduct of the energy of that individual, and they lose their own
identity.
They
can't develop.
They can't develop into who they are. And Chris, the one caller, Chris, really, you know, emphasized that in so many ways. Yeah. So, and you, Roz, and you and Jenna, you know, you point that out and bring it to full fruition, to where we get back to what's really necessary. If we're not creating things, that means somebody else is going to be creating our future for us. So create, y'all. Create. Right.
Thank you.
Much love.
Brother.
Much respect, y'all.
Thank you, brother.
Back at you, big brother. For sure. For sure. And it's funny because we're going to get deeper into that discussion with the segment where we deal with, you know, the importance of why we do, understanding why we do what we're doing. And it's I think, matter of fact, I think this is a good time to segue into that. And Scotty, are you there?
Oh, I could get that.
Okay, cool. So I wanted to play the first video.
That's Dr. Clark, correct?
No, that's one of my other Jenna, Umalimu Baruti. Two of them are him, and he's such a brilliant historian, but I wanted to just do it in these three segments, and we're going to start with one. This video, I think it's like 15 minutes. Then we're going to discuss it. Then we're going to do the next one, which I think is like 8 minutes. And then the other one, I think, is like maybe 5 or 6. And just because of what's being discussed, I think it's going to just facilitate conversation. So,
Did you put those in there? Where are they?
It's at the top. You got to go all the way to the top of the thread. I posted the first thing in there, and it says this is video number one, and it says video number two and number three.
We needed those in the chat. Okay, let me see real quick.
Go to the top of the thread. I posted them right at the top of the thread. You see it?
No. But that is all right. That is all right.
You want me to post them again? I could just copy them, I guess, and paste them.
No. Where is it? Is it Menicide?
Menicide, that's the first one, yeah.
All right, well, here we go.
Okay, cool.
But anyway, filth dominated their environment. Personal hygiene, really, there was no such thing as a personal hygiene.
Can you turn it up and start it over?
Personal life, their physical environment. Understand that. Understand the magnitude.
That's as loud as I got right now.
Okay.
Okay.
Can you start it over? Because there's a lot of noise.
No one gave them diseases. No humans gave them diseases. They got attracted to.
Hey, fellas, if y'all could post a video in the chat room, I'll play it for you.
Oh, it's in the chat. It's all the way at the top of the chat. At the very beginning of the chat, you should see it. It says, this is video number one.
No, I'm saying in the Uber conference chat.
Yeah, I did. Maybe for some reason it's not coming up for y'all. I'll redo it. Give me 1 second. I'm posting it right now. There it is.
But anyway, filth dominated their environment, their personal hygiene. Really, there was no such thing as their personal hygiene. But filth dominated their...
Yeah, that video's real. The audio's real low on it.
Okay.
That, when we understand understand the magnitude of that, we understand why so many diseases originated in European society. And it also makes clear why Europeans, as they went to invade the rest of the world, no one gave them diseases. No humans gave them diseases. They got contracted diseases from no humans. Now, they contracted diseases from animals, from mosquitoes, malaria, other things like that. But they never, there's no record to my knowledge of them contracting a disease from other people. However, everywhere they went, people contracted diseases from them. And the general reason of understanding for that is they were bathing in disease day in and day out because of the filthiness of their environment. So the disease was part of their physical being. There was, it had been ingested. It had been part of their skin, their genetic structure, their cell structure, everything for so long. And it's sort of like when someone is builds up this tolerance for something because they've been around it for so long, but then they come into contact with someone who has no tolerance from it because they have no familiarity with it. Then it kills them, even though the carrier. They're fine with it. So that's Europeans traveling around the world. But the reason why they're able to give these diseases to other people is because of the depth of the disease that they themselves carried and reflected. So everywhere that they went, this depiction of European people in the media as clean, as walking around with clean clothes on, as living in clean homes, all the rest of this, that's one of the biggest farces, the biggest lies that have been perpetrated on the minds of Africans and every other people ever. Talk about the hygiene. Bathing was seen as sinful in traditional European society, and one of the greatest examples is of Queen Elizabeth, and I'm not sure if it was the first Queen Elizabeth or which one of the Queen Elizabeths it was, but she had two baths in her life. One time was when she was born, and the other time was the day before she got married. Those are the only two times in her life that she bathed, or she was bathed. European society, in terms of the bathing, in terms of the baths, the great baths that they have, this is a result of their invasion and civilization, if you will, or attempt to civilization by the Moors. This is not of their invention. And I'm trying to go through as many things as I can, as quickly as I can. When you talk about clogs, we see in the old movies or shows or pictures of Holland, we see these women walking around in these clogs, and they were seen as they were presented to us as you know, just a style of shoes and a pretty style of shoes. And people didn't know, like myself, when I was a child, I thought that they were cute and unique. That they weren't something that carried another message, but these clogs had to do with the level of filth that existed on the streets. They had platform shoes, if you will, to keep from having to walk around in the feces and urine and other disease matter that was on their streets. And when I'm talking about this, and I talk to people, it's hard for them to imagine this. It's people have to imagine how normalized that this was, so that it was not seen as unusual, as something like bathing was seen as a sin, that people didn't have toilets in their homes, even though the Moors brought the plumbing. And when the Moors left, they destroyed a whole lot of that. They went back, as John Henry Clark would say, into another dark age. And it's difficult for people to grasp the being in a place that's just filthy and full of disease everywhere, not just in certain sectors of town or what have you, but everywhere it was like this. The clogs were used because they elevated the feet up above the slime and the crap that was on the streets. And it wasn't that everything was seen as bad. It was just certain things you just didn't necessarily want to be walking around in. You didn't know what you were going to step on. What's related to that in this understanding is the concept of look out below. When I was a child, that was given in movies, particularly pirate movies, with the crow's nest, which was that place on the top of the main mast where a person could stand and they take their telescope and could see far from the highest point in the ship. And the lie that was given was that this look out below came from that where this person might drop something. They might drop the telescope, or they might drop their knife, or they might drop something, and they would holler down to the ship, look out below, so if anybody was beneath them, they would know to scatter so that they wouldn't get hit with whatever it was that was falling. That's not where it originated. It originated in traditional European society, in British society, where these people urinated and defecated into pails in their homes, and they would toss what was in the bucket out the window onto the street. And when they, it's before they tossed, they would say, look out below. This is also, also is argued that umbrellas originated in the same way because of that. That I haven't seen evidence of. I've only heard stories relative to that. But I do know about the look out below, and I do know about the bodily waste being tossed out windows into the streets because there weren't bathrooms. As time went on, the well-to-do had plumbing systems or bathrooms developed in their homes that allowed for waste to be removed from their homes, but in general, that was not the case. So you can imagine, as many people who lived there, the thousands and thousands of people who lived in England who daily defecated and urinated into buckets and toss this out on the street, and the accumulation of this, and there wasn't a sanitation system, there weren't street sweepers, there weren't trucks that came by to clean this stuff up. It just became part of the street. Of course, you never know this from looking at the movies that they show. You think that these cobblestone streets that they rolled their beautifully horse-drawn chariot down were immaculately clean. These were filthy urban settings, not just dirty. These were filthy urban settings. I guess another example is of the Rhine River, which is one of the largest, if not the largest river in Europe. And on the sides of the Rhine River, the factories existed and the stores existed. And there was, you know, this bank, if you will, that went down to the Rhine River from these factories, from the store. And a lot of these places process meat, so the parts of the cow or the pig or the goat or the dog that they didn't eat, that got skinned off or cleaned out of this animal, it was tossed out onto this embankment. And we're talking about day after day after day after day, year after year after year after year, this stuff was tossed out, and it slowly, because of its slimy, gel-like, if you will, state, it would, as it built up, it would start to slow down. So you'd have this long pile of waste going down this embankment. There was so much of this thrown out that it slowed the Rhine River down. There was so much of this stuff that was being tossed out of these butcher shops and these other places that had slowed the Rhine down. You have to realize that this was the ground was. There was no respect for Mother Earth. There's no more respect for Sasiya then than now. The only reason that these Europeans are running around talking about saving the Earth and this green is, as one of their own, George Carlin, said, because they're trying to save their own behinds, not because they're trying to save the Earth. They don't have any more respect for the Earth now than they did then. So all trash went to the Earth. And this trash right here, which came from the innards and the outer of these animals, went into the Rhine as sludge and clogged it up. And you have to also imagine, that being the case, the level of disease that just existed in that area alone. You're tossing out the internal organs and the skin and whatever waste it is that from the animal that you don't eat, you're tossing it out into pile after pile after pile after pile to make this one long, on each side of the Rhine, mudslide of waste from the butcher shops, from the other places. The level of disease that would just exist in that. We're not going to talk about the people who died. We're not going to talk about the water. We're not going to talk about the feces and urine and whatever was thrown up that ended up on the street, the kind of the level of disease that existed in this, and you're living in this generation after generation after generation. It's understandable how you could accumulate disease that would, that of those of you would survive because just like with DDT back in the 70s when they sprayed it to get rid of the insects, a number of the insects survived, and those insects were immune to the DDT, and they had to make a stronger chemical, and they've continued to do that to date, having to keep making stronger and stronger chemicals because the insects have adjusted to that. It's become part of their being, in the same way that the monarch caterpillar eats the poisonous plants and grows up, and that poison is ingested and is very much a part of their system. So these people existed in this disease filth, and this disease filth they had acclimated to. They had become very much a part of their essence. And when they went out to other people who did not live in the situation, which was the rest of the world, people died, if you were at their sight, in their presence. Upon their arrival, they began to die because these people were filled with disease, and everything that they touched, it didn't turn to gold like it might. It killed. So you had, if you will, carpets of garbage along the run. Carpets of garbage were their streets. Carpets of garbage were their alleys. Carpets of garbage were their homes, which of course brings up another point, things that we don't see. Straw was used greatly, not just to feed the animals, but it was used as a floor covering in traditional European society. And what I found mind-boggling is not that that was a floor covering, which I guess depending upon where you live might be a comfortable floor covering if that's all you have, but what these people did, they didn't have this concept of throwing out the garbage, throwing out the trash, and for those that did, it just went out the window into the street. They would throw the remains from their food on the floor, in the fireplace, on the floor. There are records of Europeans, particularly among the elite of Europeans, who used their fireplace as a toilet to defecate in. There was also major records of these individuals, because they were so gluttonous, which is a result of being in the caves, but of course we can even go further back than that and talk about the acetylene and the spirit, but these people were so gluttonous they would eat and then go behind, that had a special room, go into the special room and throw up and then come back and eat more. And of course that wasn't into these special cans and plastic bags that were sealed and taken out to some dump somewhere where the disease was contained. This was open air in their homes. So the straw that they had to, if you will, soften their floors, this straw, after a while, because food was tossed on it, bodily waste were also put on it. I don't even want to think about how it smelled. These were thrown onto this carpet of straw that they had, and how they would change it when it got so bad or got so hard or got so slimy, they just would lay down another layer of straw. That's the part that was mind-boggling to me. They wouldn't clean it out, didn't sweep it out, didn't have somebody come in and pull it outside for them or what have you, or push it outside themselves. They just had somebody come in because the waste and the decay and the bacteria and all the rest of that, of course, the straw would settle. It would break down, like when you are decomposing leaves in your compost, and they would just lay another layer of straw on top of that, and that would be a fresh carpet for them to begin to waste on again. It helps us to understand why the quote-unquote black plague occurred in Europe, and help us understand why there were multiple black plagues. There wasn't just one. There were multiple black plagues in traditional European society. One of the most telling things about Europeans is the fleas on the rats, the disease that carried, the fleas carried the quote-unquote black plague disease. And it's so mind-boggling to me how everywhere they have gone, everywhere they have civilized, all of the things, all the negative things that had to do with them came with them. There were rats on the ships that carried us, the slavers that carried us over here. Everywhere they went, they took the disease and the carriers of their disease with them. So in places where we live, let's say in New York City, there are more roaches than there are people on this planet, because this is the infestation that they bring with them. We have to remember the stories like the Pied Piper and understand that these stories are based upon reality. This fiction is created out of events that are going on, or situations or circumstances that are going on.
That's the end of the video.
Yes, yes, yes. Brother Roz, you there?
Yeah, my bad. I had myself muted on my phone, and I had myself muted on the air too. Yeah. So, this kind of is explaining something that I discussed before, that there's a lot of diseases that, you know, melanated people globally have incurred just from their contact with them, and a lot of people don't know that, you know, that they're vectors. Just like if you study Komodo dragons, they have certain diseases that fester in their bloodstream and in their mouths. They also have, they're found to be poisonous now. They just discovered that like maybe 2 or 3 years ago. But they carry these diseases that when they bite an animal, you give them a couple of days, the animal will die from sepsis, which is blood poisoning. You have roaches. Roaches have a genetic connection to 56 diseases that are harmful to man. And I was actually reading about colloidal silver. If you want to get rid of roaches, you spray colloidal silver wherever you find them, because it kills the pathogens that they have these genetic relationships with, and they can't survive in a disease-free or germ-free environment, which is what silver creates. So he's basically explaining that they were vectors of diseases, and when they would come in contact with, you know, indigenous people over here or indigenous people on the continent of Africa or Australia, you know, they had no defense for the illnesses they carried. And we have no idea how many illnesses we've actually incurred just from being around them and with them for so long. And I think what it is like he said, they have us fooled into thinking because they wear, you know, better looking clothes that they're not the same people that they were back then, but just from their behavior, how they treat us, their system that has been in control for at least the last 500 plus years, you know that they're the same people. It's just that a lot of us are conditioned not to understand that, you know, that was their reality then, because we think in terms of today and what we see today. So it ties into something that Dr. Welton has said. And one of the most important things I think she said before she passed was that the system was moving to a more overt form of white supremacy. And basically she said she wouldn't be surprised if slavery was reinstated. And I see that, and not when I say reinstated, it's not in the context of thinking that it's done, because we know that via the 13th Amendment, slavery is still here. But she meant in a way where our ancestors experienced it. Back on the plantation, you know, abuse all day, that type of stuff, or something similar to that, a modification of that kind of a system. And there's, I think, for us to understand the importance of why we have to fight the system and do the things that we do and talk about the things we talk about, I think we need to have a more intimate experience as far as getting an understanding of what our ancestors went through. Because there's a lot of things we hear, there's a lot of things we read in books, but it's nothing like, I don't know if anyone has ever heard slave narratives, but they do have them, and you can listen to slaves in their own voices tell us some of their experiences. Some of it's very haunting to listen to. But outside of that context, I think it's hard for us to put ourselves in the shoes of someone else unless the situation is more personalized. So, Scotty, I wanted to move into the second video, and it should have.
Well, hold on, Brother Ross, because we got to go to a break real quick. We're at the top of the hour. This is Real Life, the radio show, brought to you by Foundational Radio Network on Black Talk Radio Network.
Brother Scotty, you are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
Go ahead, Brother Ross.
Hey, can we talk about what we just heard, though?
For sure.
Yes, for sure.
Because I was thinking about that, too. I was like, we need to probably chop that up a little bit. Go ahead, Brother.
Because he was saying things that were not true, man.
What was that?
He was giving the impression that that Europeans are the sole cause of disease on the planet when there are people dying of disease before European contact, even here in the Americas, oh, yeah. as well as in Africa. South America, I think it was a disease that wiped out a whole bunch of those Incas and what have you. And that was
That was salmonella. I read about that. They thought it was smallpox. And then they did actual testing on the bodies and found that it was the strain of salmonella that was so powerful that it wiped, like you said, the vast majority of them out. But it was actually salmonella. And that article is posted on BTR. I posted it a while ago, but I know exactly what you're talking about. Go ahead, Scotty. I'm sorry.
Oh, no problem. No problem. So I'm just trying to figure out the motivation when people say these sort of things. We do know. Okay, for example, let's use smallpox, all right? Indians was already dying of smallpox before contact with the Europeans. Now, the Europeans just figured out a way to weaponize it with people who already, because, I had posted some stuff in the chat about early colonists coming over here, man, and they had a life expectancy of only 5 years because they was getting killed off by a disease so bad. But it was later that I guess they built up immunity. But no, when white victims of smallpox, the blankets and stuff that they use, they then turn around and gave those to Native Americans to infect them with smallpox. But I mean, that's just, to me, that's like he being anti-white, man. It's like he trying to say they the carriers of all disease that has ever happen to anybody on the planet, and that's just simply not true. That's what I got from what he was saying.
Oh, okay. And I could understand that too. Go ahead. Who's that, Chris?
Yeah, I got something to say on that.
Go ahead.
Well, it the thing is, people be in certain situations in their life, and they catch stuff or they get things and things happen and then you become infected and you spread it out. But it did kind of sound like, and I've heard that story before, how we say they all carry, they the nastiest, they the filthiest. And we run across some of them that are, they a little unclean in how they handle stuff. They might not wash their hands. They might eat raw meat when it's bleeding, things of that nature. But at the same time, I think that's just that person. I kind of see Scotty's point. He's kind of basically saying he's just trying to say, I'm not going to say what he's trying to say, but basically from what I got from it, he's saying that you basically saying that all diseases came from them, and if they didn't come over here, we wouldn't have got sick. So that makes sense in a sense, but at the same time, there's no evidence to really back that up. It's mainly just trying to put another path on someone else. Because if you were sitting there and your heart stopped and a European walked up to you and could revive you, would you be like, no, go on, just let me die? Or would you let this man breathe or this woman breathe in your mouth and keep you alive?
None of that matters in the situation.
Yeah, exactly. It don't matter. But if you think it, if life or death, you got some people that might be like, life or death will change you. You know what I'm saying? But I get it, because you got to understand where things came from and what has happened, but we gotta kind of stop throwing negative cards at them with no evidence and no justification on when we do throw it. Like, after we say all this, not that you said it, but say if I just sat there and I just gutted them out completely, I still got to go to work in the morning.
That's it.
But I don't have no backup for me gutting them out. I don't know that this man, but if you watch certain movies and you see how they came over here and they built certain shacks, and you look at how Africa looked and how Italy looked and all that, Moors in Spain and certain Egyptian atmospheres, you can tell that these people were people who didn't have certain type of tools. I mean, if you look at the Western days, that tells you, if you look at the old Western movie, like me and my dad just flew down here, we watching John Wayne on TV. If you look at how the scenery looked, they were walking down dirt roads.
Yeah.
In the 1800s, 1900s, they was walking down dirt roads. but yet they got running water over in Africa. You know what I'm saying?
So, it's crazy, man. I heard a few, well, a lot of inconsistencies. I seen where the premise was going, and that's why I was gonna we gonna get into the next video, Brother Rise, and then we'll go ahead on begin to wrap this up.
Can you post it in the chat? It's the second video in the chat. Yeah, oh, I see them. You got them. Video number two and video number three. And if I may just add this on that subject right there.
Yes.
The speaker was also ignoring the fact that those people, now he's telling them the truth about how nasty they was in those urban settings in Europe. But that was the poor people. That was the poor people, because the toilets and stuff, the rich people wasn't living like that. The queens and the kings weren't living like that.
What he was right about was with the bath, because I know that it was one queen, and one queen who bathed twice her whole life, and they call her the cleanest queen in England. And I think that was it might have been Queen Elizabeth, like you said, or Queen Victoria, but it was one of them, and that, like, it was documented she only took two baths her whole life, and they call her the cleanest woman in England. And like, it was, for them it was just normal. And they did have a culture where taking baths was considered to be a negative thing, like literally. That was something that was also documented. Like, that was the cultural mindset. So they didn't live in filth like that in the castle, because, like you said, they did have means and they had servants all over the place. So that was different.
Because I was reading, they was dumping the waste in the moats and stuff. You know, you see the castle with the moat and what have you. That you know, they would use chamber pots and what have you. But the toilet was actually invented in the 1500s, but only rich, wealthy people had them, and they didn't become. And then we have to also consider the Europeans that came over here mostly were poor and criminals.
And they were criminals. They didn't have anything.
Yeah.
And a lot of them were indentured to people just so that they could be free. They had to pay for the ride over here. And they told them either you rot in jail or you could go to America. And they were like, of course I'm going to go to America. I don't want to stay in jail. So they would take the trip, and then they would have to indenture themselves to pay for their ferry from England to over here. And that's how you had those first quote-unquote white slaves. They were basically indentured servants that were criminals back in England. And after that, they basically had free run after they finished, you know, their set 5 or 7 years. Usually it was like 7 years.
We started out on this...
I'm sorry, I'm ready to, you ready?
Okay.
Go ahead, Scotty.
Okay. This video number two.
Short. Yeah, this should be short.
It's 2 minutes.
We started out on this journey in what we call coffle lines. They were called the coffle lines, the collections of us, the groups of us that were marched across the continent. Most of us came from West Africa, the area of Ghana and that Geno area. But we were walked across in what was called coffle lines. And again, we are confused because someone else's story. Yes, we were captured in battle. Yes, some of us were kidnapped. Yes, some of us were sold as slaves. And of course, we'll have to deal with that question also, because that is a major victim-blaming logic that we have. Well, why are we talking about this? Africans enslaved other Africans. Africans helped Europeans. And in fact, Africans, it ends up with the argument that Africans were wholly responsible. We did this to ourselves. Europeans took us off of our own hands to help us, to civilize us. But we're not going there right now. The coffle lines were where we came in. We were kidnapped. We were we were taken as slaves. We were sold by Africans and other Europeans. We were also taken from the campuses of the colleges and the schools that we had on the campus. We had colleges, just like before integration in this country. We had dental schools, we had medical schools, we had law schools here that were black schools. So we were taken off of also the college campuses in West Africa. It wasn't just folks running around trying to dig up some roots. We were taken from all areas. And Europeans, being the systematic people that they are, they were trying to build a nation. They were trying to build a nation, so they needed skilled labor. They needed iron workers. They needed architects. They needed every type of occupation that's required to build a nation. So they systematically look for particular types of people. They look for young folks who would have lost, hopefully, a connection with their people by the time they became teenagers, and they took men primarily, but also women who had the skills that they needed. North Carolina was famous for their iron working during our enslavement. The wrought iron fences that you see down here in the South, these were made by us. And Africans, being the intelligent people that they were, a lot of the symbolism you see in these wrought iron fences are Adinkra symbols or communications with each other. So the most famous one where you have a pole here, a pole here, a pole here, and the art inside goes like this, and then the other side goes like that, that's a Sankofa symbol. The same thing I was talking about. Go back and fetch it. That's a Sankofa symbol. Look in the dictionary of Adinkra symbols. That's a Sankofa symbol. So we knew exactly what we were doing. Just like sisters who made the quilts and hung them on the lines to tell you what time, what direction, what house was safe, where you needed to go when you were running away from this. We knew exactly what we were doing, and they brought the people who had those skills. On these coffle lines where we would march sometimes for weeks, sometimes for months on end, average distance, 1,000 miles. I don't know how many people in here who have watched the movie Rabbit Proof Fence.
Yes.
Yeah.
That was about the length of the walk, what those girls did, approximately 1,000 miles. In these coffle lines, every one out of every three Africans died. Year after year after year, for hundreds of years, thousands of people being moved at a time. For every three of us who marched, one died, was murdered, however you want to phrase it. One out of every three didn't make it. When we talk about the number of us who were killed in the Middle Passage, we have to bear these calculations in mind. They can't be dismissed. Now, one of the telling stories about this is when you read the histories of people, one of the consistent things that you find is that as you marched along, chained to the person who was in front of you, by your neck, by your waist, by your hands, particularly little children just chained by their neck, or sometimes with a piece of wood that had like a Y that was tied together with another piece of wood that had a tie to the next person, so if you move, they moved. Okay. Along with that, as you were watching, you saw something that was incredible. Europeans changed natures at a number of points. You look on the side of the road, you look on the side of the road of the path, and you see wild animals who did not attack the line, who did not attack the coffle lines. The main reason that they didn't, and you see it immediately, is that there are dead, decaying, half-eaten or fully eaten bodies on the side of the road. That's that one out of every three. That when they died or got sick, their hand, if it took too much time, was severed from their arm and they would drop to the side of the road. The animals changed their normal hunting behavior because food was plentiful. They didn't have to hunt anymore because plenty of food was there. You got to stop and think about this. You got to use your imagination and imagine. If there are 30 of you in this line, 10 of you are going to be on the side of the road being eaten. 10 of you are not going to make it. There was no rest stops. You were obviously not cared for. So what happened as you were walking along and you had to use the bathroom? Number one or number two? They were not going to stop for you. If you had to throw up, nobody was going to stop for you. So you urinated and you defecated as you walked. If you were on your cycle, nobody stopped for you. The blood ran where it ran. So you're walking in the feces and the urine of whoever's in front of you. Yeah, whenever I'm talking about this, I see people, brothers and sisters. I can already say sisters the first time I gave this lecture, but brothers too, I see them in pain, and I'm happy. You're supposed to be in pain. This is supposed to hurt. It hurts me. You're supposed to hurt. When it hurts, that means that you understand. That means that you're moving back to where you're supposed to be. as you're walking along, feces, urine, what have you, all over the place, whatever bodily, whatever dropped off on you, whoever was behind you. If your mother died as you're walking along, they chop her hand off, I mean, you feel what? Your baby brother, your baby sister, these folks are family. These folks are family. These are people who you love with all your heart and soul. And they are dying and dropping off like flies right in front of your face. But the breaks that you took were not for you. They were for the entertainment of the people who were walking, because this was when the raping began. This was when people who were carrying you, if you want to call these people, begin the process of raping you. And don't sit here and assume for half a second that they didn't carry on with us what they did with their own. They practiced on themselves and animals and each other, the men, before they got to us. They were experienced in sadism. They were experienced in rape. They understood rape as a weapon. European male's penis is the first biological weapon. So you're sitting there, dog tired, can barely move, and you lift up your head. And you see these freaks dragging your mother off to the bush. Or maybe they just don't care. They do it out in open. She's raped, your daughter's raped, your wife is raped, and then they grab your son. And he comes back barely able to walk. Because we understand, and if you don't understand, then you might want to read my Homosexuality and the Feminization of African Males. You have to understand that Europeans are a homosexual people. And they did not leave that in Europe when they went around the world. Some of us are even lost enough, treasonous enough, to want to sponsor and go on with Europeans trips to these castles for jazz concerts. So that we can help Europeans erase their guilt. Isn't that the form of European validation? They know that they can dance because we tell them. They know they can play basketball because we tell them. They know that what they did to us is okay because we tell them. Don't worry about it. That was then. That's not you. You never do anything like that. And you definitely aren't benefiting from it.
Guys.
Yes. Can you hear me?
I didn't know if that was the end of it or not. Yeah, we
no,
can hear you.
It was short. Yeah, it was not super long. I think Scotty said it was like 10 minutes. So I just thought that the descriptiveness of that would give everyone the ability to kind of put yourself in the place of our ancestors mentally for a minute and just imagine being on the receiving end of that. And in a lot of ways, we're on the receiving end of a lot of that now. It's just not in that context anymore. And sometimes it's from our own people now, which is even sadder. But ultimately, with what Dr. Wilson said about this system going back to a more overt expression of the way it used to be, and, you know, with the potential of overt, outright slavery, not just prison industrial complex organized slavery, but just outright slavery. I just thought that having that kind of context would give us the ability to understand why we do what we do and the importance of not arguing about insignificant things that are going to keep us away from focusing on solving the problem. And with everything that Dave discussed on his show earlier this evening, I think it's even more poignant that we had this discussion around this particular issue, because it could be our reality as far as what they might try to instate. That's why when I posted that article dealing with the soldier who avoided World War III back in 99 just by disobeying orders, and I said we're going to have to see what the soldier's moral metal is going to be. Part of that might entail re-enslavement, where they're told, listen, you know, we're going to use the army to facilitate this. You know, these black folks ain't going to act up, you know, and they might have to say, you know, am I going to take orders from you and you know, mistreat my own people? Or am I going to go ahead with the plan and do whatever you tell me to do? And I just thought that this kind of discussion would be facilitated just by getting that visual where we can put ourselves in their place momentarily and just work through those emotions or whatever that comes to you that you process in that moment. So I'm gonna hand it over to you, Jenna, to find out what.
Hey, both of those was some like I said, I'm gonna have to go back and do some timelining on that first video.
Mm-hmm.
That second video, it's a lot of people that always holler, if I was living during that time, I would blank, blank, blank.
Mm-hmm.
But like you said, we're getting close to show and prove time, because they are slowly pushing us back into that corner.
I agree.
And the people that you hold dear, like Dave said earlier, you know, mend those broken relationships, because we're going to be dependent on each other. Some relationships can be fixed, some can't. You know, but fix as many as you can, because you're going to need everybody you know. And some of them you're going to have to just cut out blatantly, because they're going to be no good to you anyway and a danger to your family. But we are sneaking up on this with this war looming, prices going up.
Yeah.
Everything is set in motion for a huge disaster. And Scotty made some great points, and
I agree.
You know, what, even over here on this chat too, I've been reading these comments. Yo, Scotty, you stay on point. You too, brother Otis. Man, it's scary, because it's not just gonna be you. You're not gonna be fighting just for you, you know. A lot of us do things in the heat of the moment or in a blind rage or what have you. But you're going to be having to make these decisions with your family right there by your side. It's a scary thing to think about, you know. Because like I said, once again, all of this I would have done, we getting to that point slowly but surely. And it's not looking good. So, Brother Roz, when I started this radio network, again, I've said this many, many times, it was so much that I was finding out that I should have known years ago. So I wanted to be able to share the same information as I learned it, because I learned just as much here as those who listen. Hopefully we bring constructive information to their life the same way that they bring it to us.
Yeah.
But being prepared is something that I'm not sure, after all of the years that have passed by, that we're just used to. We're so wasteful. Uh-huh. We do a lot of, not everybody, but the majority of us, black and white people, we just very wasteful as far as over here in the Americas. And my grandmother used to tell me about the Dust Bowl, and she told me that they didn't feel it as much as the white people felt it, because we were so used to being on our own and shut out anyway.
Yeah.
now 2018 is a completely different time, and we are so ingrained into this system that we talk about, discuss, and give solutions on how the system can end and what we will do once it did end.
Right.
We are right here on the footsteps of that time. And as much preparing as I've done, I'm not sure if I'm ready. You know, I mean, that's just the truth. You can never have enough bullets. You can never have enough silver or gold. Never enough perishable items. Beans, rice, water, all of these things. Batteries, the CB radio I was asking about earlier. Fishing rods. These drones that I was talking about to be able to maneuver around without getting yourself hurt. All of these things are going to come into play. We have been discussing these items, these sequence of events, and the outcome for quite some time now. And I'm just wondering how many people paid us any of attention. Check us out every week, whether it's us, Brother Scotty, Dave, Time for Awakening. Shout out to them, Brother Max on at New Abolitionist Radio, the Duns, all of these stations that Brother Scotty has helped facilitate to be out discussing these particular issues that are very, very near and dear to all of us, even if we don't know it. And that's one of the more scarier things, is that a lot of us don't know it. We're going to be hit blindsided, like Dave was saying, just waiting for the knockout punch, smelling the rose with your eyes closed. You know that, hey, you're going to get your... Yes, sir. Is that you, Brother Scotty?
Yeah, that's me, Chris. Oh, man.
Chris.
I'm coming back on the third round.
no worries.
I do believe that, I do believe that when these people, when they did what they did, it was business. The human body was business. And like it still is today. There's no way that they actually took grown people and then moved them to a place, put them in a certain position, and then told them what to do. First of all,
Brother Chris, my apologies, man. My apologies. We'll come right back to you. We're right here at this last break of the night. Are listening to Real Life the Radio Show with your host, Brother Rise, and myself, Brother Jenna. Brought to you by Foundational Radio Network on Black Talk Radio Network.
Make Black Talk Radio your choice for digital black radio. New black media for the new millennium.
Brother Chris, your mic is open.
I was just saying, I don't believe that they brought people. I believe they brought people over. I'm not saying this slave, you know, did not happen, but I'm saying there's no way you can take a people and bring them to a place and then you get them to do something. First of all, none of these Europeans knew an African dialect. If they did, we probably would be speaking it right now. So I do think they did have women and children. They had young children, and then they breeded these children. And,
the average age was 16, Brother Chris.
Okay. See, they was untouched. See, when you get a 15-year-old, or you get some a child at birth, you can do anything you want. And that's what they have done for hundreds of years. That's what the system was doing. And it was just a part of business. It really was. And then so when I say that, it's just when I hear people talk about it, they always try to make it look like that it's some grown man that got snatched from his kingdom and his family and brought over, and then they just start working. Well, where are these descendants at? It's because they didn't have those. They had young individuals. Yeah. It was people that you can take over and dominate. You did not have grown people with a dialect. There's no way you couldn't pass that dialect on. No matter how much you were being persecuted, you would be able to give your child something or someone something or speak some type of language.
In some cases, that did happen, because my grandmother actually spoke Ghanaian.
We she call it patois, but she spoke Ghanaian. She's a black Carib, originally from Dominica, and then she migrated to Trinidad when she was like six. And that's how. Go ahead.
And that was my, just me talking without, you know, because a lot of these brothers, when they talk, they're going off of their feelings and they're going off of what they think happened. Because nobody's bringing up any books that's telling me what they, you know, when you listen to them and they tell you what actually happened, they don't reference nothing. They just say it and it sounds good. And someone that looks like you, well, your uncle or your cousin. Chris. And I'll end on this last part though. I'm gonna get off, man. Everything y'all saying tonight make a lot of sense, but we also have to be, you also got to be 50-50. When I say that, I mean, you got to think about what's going on. When you were talking about silver and might not have enough and all this, we also got to be another 50 with just living our daily life and being with our family and enjoying everything. So you got to be, I just want to say to the people, have that balanced scale. Enjoy yourself.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah.
Enjoy your family.
You are correct. You are correct, but that's something that we all gonna do anyway, as much as possible, because this is not on the minds of most people anyway, so they don't even see this coming. I'm speaking about not having enough silver, not having enough guns, just because of the way that I wanted to be prepared when I got to this point, the way I seen it coming, and it could happen at any time. Most people don't have that outlook, and that's why I stated us here on Black Talk Radio Network to be able to like you said, that 50-50 point is, I'm not sure if anybody would be ready for this.
Nobody would be.
No matter how much money you have.
I just don't want no brothers walking out of their jobs tomorrow and you know, because some cats will cut everything off because they think this is over and it's gonna happen next week.
Oh yeah, nah. Well, yeah,
that's why I said that.
That happened during the Y2K joint.
Yeah, I remember that too. That was ridiculous.
Yeah, but I was 50-50. That's what I'm trying to tell.
Talk about black mental health, and that is like a number one. And as long as your priorities are straight, which has to do with, you know, your health and then your family, in that order, then it's all good. What we were trying to do is just put the mindset of understanding that this stuff that we do is like, it's real, it's serious stuff, and it's just stuff that we have to take into consideration. It doesn't mean that you should completely alter your life, because you might lose family behind that. You come home, start doing stuff they've never seen you do before, they're gonna think you're losing it and just start bugging, and it's not something for you to overreact to or anything. Is there something to be aware of? And like Dave said, just start preparing. And really, when it comes to human relationships, the relationships you foster with people that you might need down the road, you know, I'm just saying, and I said that at the beginning, it's really about putting aside anything that is not conducive to us working together towards solving the problem. And I think that is going to be a major hurdle. And it seems to me, just from history, we have been able to come together when the brutality ratchets up. In the past, we were forced to be together because that was the process of segregation. It was that form of white supremacy. But it made understanding who the enemy was or who was most dangerous, it made it pretty clear. Now we live in neighborhoods where a lot of the people who are dangerous look like us. And then on top of that, we have the system of white supremacy as well. So, like they said, the relationships you foster, if they really matter, work on fixing them. Just work on getting whatever that is hashed out, and just understand that, you know, if that relationship is salvageable and that relationship is important enough to you, that is what's necessary. If it's not important, then you keep it moving. You know, and this is just for me, I've just been thinking about a lot of the things that have been just going on that I felt really didn't have to be happening. It wasn't necessary. To me, it's all distractions from solving the problem. And I just thought about what Dr. Welson was saying when she talked about slavery. And Dr. John Henry Clark said it back in like 93. And he just said it regarding the educational system. He was like, the educational system in this country is geared towards getting black people to accept their only enslavement. That was his exact words. And then Dr. Welson said it repeatedly before she passed away. And I think that, you know, if we can keep the understanding that they're trying to go back to something more overtly oppressive than what we've already been living, which seems to be overtly oppressive already, but a lot worse, then maybe we will, when we come together to do constructive work via these conversations, then we'll focus on what's really important. And that's really the ultimate the ultimate end of everything, to reorganize our thought process.
Mm-hmm. Just to add on to that, Roz, it's just letting your children, and for those of us who have grandchildren, cousins, just making them aware is another thing. You know, we come here and we all share information. Some have been heard before. Some it's the first time they've heard it. You know, I know three of y'all, well, four of y'all brothers, I know y'all always come with the newest, freshest information available that most people don't get to see. So when you share this information with your family, it's scary at some points. Scotty, your mic is always open.
Absolutely.
I just didn't want to interrupt anyone.
I understand, bro. Go ahead.
Look, brothers, I'm going to be real with you. I don't strive for unity with people based on skin color. I'd rather unify with those. I do gravitate towards those who look like me. That's just natural for me to gravitate. But when it comes right down to where the rubber meets the road, I'm trying to unify with like minds. You know what I'm saying? That's what I'm trying to do. There have been people who have come to Black Talk Radio Network over the past 9 years that I was like, no, you can't be on here. Because I'm not, you know, you entitled to your beliefs, but you're going to have to take your beliefs somewhere else. Because I'm not into that anti-blackness. I'm not into this pseudo-history that you're coming up with that has no basis in reality and no proof that you could point me to. So I just can't, you know, I think it's a waste of, I don't think at no time. Now, when we're talking about African victims of slavery, when we're talking about us, yeah, we were forced to be, you know, unified because we were all suffering at the hands of the very same people. But they don't even got 100%. There's not unity in Africa. There's been tribal wars going on since tribes began. And that's not just with Africa. It was here in America. All these Indians wasn't together on one page. They were fighting among each other and enslaving each other. And I think it's a mistake for us as victims of slavery, victims of white supremacy, that when we talk about slavery in a historical context, like he was talking about saying it's victim blaming, it's not victim blaming to tell the truth. I think it makes Africa look weak if the narrative is, oh, Europeans and Arabs was just running up in Africa, just taking who they wanted, when they wanted. It didn't go down like that. But if that's the narrative that you're pushing, that makes Africa look very, very weak. And
that's not actually accurate, because I know for a fact you had tribes that were beefing with each other, and once they started to get them guns for basically selling their captives to the white folks, they collected the whole tribe. It's like, send them all out. And they would get their guns and their liquor and whatever else they wanted and keep it moving. So, yeah.
All groups of people have had collaborators. Africa would not have become colonized if it wasn't the wealthy, the elite classes who got them trinkets and what have you, and agreed to this, and agreed to let these people come in and get a foothold on the continent and what have you. Same thing here. Same thing here. We talking about Aboriginal Americans. Same thing. You know, I will say this about the European. He's master of exploiting what's already there. If he sees a crack, he's going to turn it into the Grand Canyon. You know what I'm saying? They're masters at exploitation. But I think it's a mistake for us to shoot for 100% unity, because I don't see that as ever happen. Let's unify with fellow people with the same goals, the same ideals, the same thoughts on justice and what have you. That's who we should be looking to unite with, because if we think that everybody who looks like us is down with for us and they gonna treat me like a brother or treat me like a sister, we gonna be disappointed.
You know, be sadly mistaken.
We gonna be disappointed. We gonna be disappointed, man. And so yeah, I just wanted to say that, you know, Africa was not
a utopia,
a weak, but it wasn't weak the way some of us make it sound, because we, for some reason, it could be psychological, we don't want to acknowledge that certain African kingdoms, with the war with other African, not even kingdoms, but just tribes, you know, they didn't have power or wasn't as organized, and they were selling these people, man, the kingdom of Dahomey. Man, I'm telling you, them kings was no homie of mine. Okay.
Yeah, they were famous. They were famous. Man. As a matter of fact, there's stories amongst the Yoruba people where whole priesthoods were kidnapped and brought here. And there's certain deities worshipped here that are no longer worshipped in Africa because the entire priesthood was kidnapped and brought over here. So, yeah, you are absolutely right about that. So,
but that's why, like Chris was bringing up, though, the average age of these victims was, these were children, man. These were children, 16 years old, man. Yeah. Children. And what can a child do against a grown-ass man?
But you know what? It kind of reminds me of that African proverb that I have in my my essay on education, with the lion and the wild boar, where the boars find the cub and kidnap him and raise him into thinking he's one of them, you know, and then he has his wake-up period when he comes across these lions. But that's what they did to these children. They take them in. That's why they used to force the Aboriginals in Australia and the Indigenous people here to give their children over. Remember, they would cut their hair. You know, they couldn't speak their language. They had to speak English. They would abuse them, you know, they would sexually abuse them, but they basically put them in school. They had to wear, you know, buttoned up shirts and pants and dresses for the girls and all of that stuff, and basically remade them, or attempted to remake them psychologically into what they wanted them to be. And when you kidnap in children 16 and, you know, really young children, you can mold them. And that reminds me again of King Leopold's letter, because he makes that firm part of his address, is that get those children to respect your word even more than their parents.
One last thing. Mm-hmm. You know, it was also brought up, Dr. Frances Cress Welsin was brought up, and her saying it was going to become a more overt form of slavery. Has anybody on this line been in prison for a number of years? Because it gets, I stay depressed reading these stories, man. It's actually worse than it was on a plantation. And I'm going to tell you why. At least on the plantation, they could get fresh air. At least they wasn't in a cage almost 24/7. They wasn't in cages. Males are the most rape gender in the United States because of prison slavery. Okay? And people are getting beaten to death. They're being forced to fight each other for the entertainment of everything we read about in terms of pre-1865 victims of slavery occurs in these prisons, man. It's terrible, man. Right. It's terrible. And what's so terrible about it, my little brother was in prison, and every time I went to visit him at the prison, it was damn more black folks as prison guards than it was white. That pissed me off.
Yeah, man. And in certain parts of the country, there's a lot of black faces that are running these prisons. You know, my father-in-law was a CO in Trenton State Prison for probably 35, I think, years or something like that. And he passed away like a year ago. It'll be a year, coming up on the year next month. And he was there when the hurricane was there, and I remember he had told me that, he said there's prisoners that come to the prison who, you know, on site are innocent people. And he said when hurricane came there, he knew on site that he was, and he said he's, you know, he established a relationship with them,
and that he had chosen to stay in his cell all the time. Like, he would never leave. He said he was severely depressed, and he wanted no contact with the other prisoners at all. So he would just talk to them. Just, you know, sometimes they would pray together, other times they would talk. And then eventually he was able to, you know, coax him out of his cell, and everybody in the prison basically knew his story and knew that he was innocent, so nobody was really bothering him or anything. And, you know, they were actually pretty cool. And he also told me about Frank Lucas. And he said Frank Lucas was just, you know, just arrogant, and he used to have women come in every weekend, you know, furs and all kind of stuff, thinking that he was on vacation. And he had to, like, accept them and say, hey, Frank, this is not your house. This is prison. You have to, you know, respect the fact that, you know, you're here for a reason. And, you know, Frank toned it down, you know. But those are two of the stories he told me. But, you know, he's made it clear that when he went into to the law enforcement, it was because of what happened in his family. His family was three people out of the Trenton Six. This is a story that's been suppressed across this country for a long time. And it's basically six young black teenagers that were falsely accused of a murder of a white man in Trenton at a junkyard. They said that he was beaten to death with a Coke bottle. And three of those people were the brother and cousin and two cousins to my father-in-law. And my father-in-law, the only reason he wasn't caught up was that the night that they were picked up, he wasn't with them that night. He didn't hang out with them that night, but they hung out all the time. And after all the hell that they went through, because this was the first big case that Thurgood Marshall took, Paul Robeson spoke out about this, Einstein, Pat Siegel, all these people came out because they knew these young people were innocent. And ultimately, they were exonerated, but their lives were ruined. They basically carried the stigma of being murderers, even though they were exonerated for the crime. And most of them turned to alcohol, and just their lives fell apart, and they died quite, you know, sad lives. And it was that experience that made him think that he could become an officer and change things from the inside. And when he got in there and experienced the white supremacy, because they gave it to him in prison, he understood that it was beyond his ability to fix. So he just did the best that he could to help people while he was in there and working there, and until he left. And so I totally understand what you're saying, Scotty.
Yeah, we're getting sold out today, man, by the elites like Obama, even mm-hmm. old John Lewis and them. It's just like the kings of the homie, man. They don't care nothing about the masses. They don't care nothing about the everyday, the average Joe, as they say. They don't care nothing mm-hmm. about you or me. All they care about is accumulating butter biscuits, and will sell out whoever they want to sell out, whoever they have to sell out, so that they can be comfortable, man. So that's why I agree, you know, with Mr. Fuller on, you know, I don't always agree with his assessments, but I absolutely agree with him that it's about mm-hmm. justice. And what does that look like?
Yeah.
His definition of a system of justice is where no one is mistreated, and I emphasize no one, and everybody mm-hmm. who needs help gets help. That's what I'm aiming for, man. And I thank Mr. Fuller for making it so plain, as they say.
Yes. You're so right. Yes. I agree with you 1,000 on that. Go ahead.
The ending of all of that, like Brother Scotty just said, justice for everyone, and also whoever needs help gets help. These are the things that we need to be instilling in our children, like I said earlier, our grandchildren, for those of us who have those, and our great grandchildren. That's the whole purpose. For you to find some small piece of help by way of information and pass that along to the people that follow you. Just like in that Childish Gambino video, the children are always watching us, and they do exactly what we do, even if we didn't do the best in life, to be able to pass along the best things of ourselves to them. Mm-hmm. To watch them build something greater that we may not be able to see. Brother Rise, it's all yours.
All right. Thanks for being here with us this evening, this Tuesday, May the 8th. Thank you so much to Brother Scotty and Black Talk Radio Network for facilitating this evening's program. Thanks to all the callers and listeners. Brother Otis, I see you there. Much love to you. Brother Chris, thanks for chiming in. You dropped a lot of great insight, as did Brother Scotty as well. Thanks for rounding the discussion out so beautifully. And it's such a privilege and an honor to be able to speak with you all each week. So we're going to wrap it up, and we'll see you again next week. I'm going to just say the prayer, and then we'll take it out. Creator, we ask that you help us to remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us to remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time that we are in contact with another black person. Like Gus says, it has been time to replace white supremacy with justice ASAP. I am in the love of the all, and all love is in me. I am a part of the all, and the all is a part of me. I can succeed as a part of the all and fail as an individual. I can be all that I wish in the all, as long as my wish is to stay in the all. I am never alone. The all is, I am. The all can, I can. The all does, I do. Thanks again. Peace and love. Thanks for being with us this week. We'll see you next week. Good night.
Peace and love. Thank you again, Scott.